All right. So thank you for coming, especially in this weather. The topic for today is the Pharisees versus the Sadducees, or as is known in Hebrew, the Purushim versus the Tzedukim. It's a very important topic because it has a lot to do with understanding the world of rabbinic Judaism with which we live today. And it also has tremendous implications to understanding the history of the end of the Second Temple and the beginning of Christianity. A lot of this really has to do with the core of the beginning of Christianity. So just for a little bit of background, the Second Temple is rebuilt after the Jews returned from Babylon with permission from Cyrus. And then you have Alexander.
Hello.
You have Alexander the Great comes to Israel, and you have the Greeks, and the Greeks don't like that the Jews are keeping the Jewish laws, and it's at that time that you have a real identity, not crisis, but formation. People really start thinking about what it means to be Jewish versus what it means to be Greek. And so with the victory of the Hashmonaim, the famous miracle of Hanukkah, that's the very beginning of Jewish identity seeking. People are trying to seek what does it mean to be Jewish. They're no longer heavily influenced by the Greeks, and they're free to think for themselves, who are we, what do we stand for, what do we stand for, what does this all mean? And a lot of these questions had to do with who was in power, and so let's dive right into it. The first source is from the Ramban, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, Nachmanides, in his commentary to the Torah. The Torah says that Jacob gathers his children around him at the end of his days, and he gives them each a blessing according to their character. Yeah, so he tells each one what he is, and then when he's blessing Judah, he says, Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda u'mechokek mi bein raglav. The ruling, the scepter shall not be removed from Judah, and the lawmaker should not ever go away from him. So Nachmanides explains, what does this mean? Aval inyano, and I'm sorry, it's in Hebrew, but I'll translate. Shelo yasur shevet mi Yehuda elechad meechav. The ruling, being king, will not be taken away from Judah to one of his brothers. Ki malchut Yisrael amoshel aleihem imenu yiyeh. The kingdom of Israel, who is going to be ruling all of Israel, is going to come from Judah. Velo yimshol echad meechav alav. And none of his siblings is going to rule over him. And then it says that this is the kingship of David and his family, and that's going to stay this way all the way through the times of Mashiach. I'm going to go to the second paragraph. The Hakatuv Azeh Ramaz, this verse, this scripture hints Ki Yaakov Himlich Shevet Yehuda Alechav, that Jacob appointed Judah to be a king over his brothers. Vehorish li Yehuda Hamemshala al Israel. He gave over to Judah the government over Israel. V'inyan Shaul Haya. Why was Saul? You may ask, who was from the tribe of Binyamin, why was Saul a king? Ki ba'avur shedvar she'elat ha'malchut ba'et ha'hi nit'av etzel ha'kadosh baruch hu. Since the matter of monarchy was despised by God at that time, it wasn't the time to have a monarchy. Lo ratza lamlich aleh min ha'shevet asher lo ha'malchut. You know, you remember the prophet Samuel gets upset at the Jews for wanting a king at that time. It wasn't the time to want a king. They wanted it for the wrong reasons. So he, so to speak, gave them someone from the wrong tribe. So King Saul is a sort of a demo of a king. So he didn't want King David. He gave them a temporary royalty. According to my opinion, Nachmanides says, the kings that ruled over Israel when the kingdom of Israel seceded were violating the law.
In the kingdom of David.
So after King Solomon died, there was a split. You had the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah. And so those kings, Ahav, all of those kings who were Israelites, they were in violation of the dictum, Lo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda. And now he comes to one of his most, this in bold letters, is actually one of the most famous commentaries Nachmanides has ever made. This is the reason the Hashmonaim, the house of the Hasmoneans, the ones who are the great heroes of the miracle of Hanukkah, become the villains of history. They appointed themselves kings in the time of the Second Temple, and that is something he's now going to sharply criticize them for. If you can just please pass that down. So, ki hayu chasidei elyon. No doubt, Nachmanides says, they were righteous people. Bilmalei hem nishtakhu haTorah veHaMitzvot meYisrael. If it wasn't for them, the Torah and the commandments would have been forgotten from Israel, because the Greeks would have made us completely Greek, and there would be nothing left. However, even though they get that the credit for that, afal piken ne'enshu onesh gadol. They got a very severe punishment. Kiarbat bnei chashmonai hazaken achasidim, the four sons of the old Matityahu, who were righteous ones, hamolchim zachar ze im kol gvuratam v'atzlachatam, with all their heroism and success, naflu beyad oyvehem becharev. They all died in war. The hegia onesh basof, and the punishment was so severe, l'masha amru rabotenu zichronam levracha, so much so that the rabbis said, kol man de'amar mibeit chashmonai ka'atina, anyone who says he is a descendant of the Hasmoneans must actually be a descendant of one of their slaves, because they were completely eradicated. Shenichritu kulam ba'avon hazeh. So they were all destroyed. Now, why is this relevant to the issue of the Sadducees and the split between the Pharisees and the Sadducees? What happened was, and this is very evident in both history and archaeology, the Hashmonaim appointed themselves kings, and so they took two branches of government, so to speak. They became both kings and priests. And so you have this class living in Jerusalem that is very wealthy and very powerful. And the class of Kohanim is supposed to be the class of people who are humble, modest, even sometimes poor, and teach the people Torah. But instead, you have the Kohanim being the centers of power, the centers of government, and at very big odds with the population. And so that's what happens with the Tzedukim, and you see this with the archaeology of Jerusalem. The area close to the temple is the area where the rich and powerful live. These are the people who are in government, and they're also Kohanim. They also get donations from the Masrot. So you can imagine they're not the most popular group, and a lot of these people become the Tzedukim. It's not clear exactly when the Tzedukim begin. However, it's interesting. One of the Haftorahs we read is HaKohanim HaLevim B'nei Tzadok. Does it sound familiar, anyone? Tzadok is mentioned in the Bible as a righteous person, as a very righteous person. He was a Kohen that was dedicated to God. So the people who were Kohanim and were the like elite of Kohanim were also the descendants of Tzadok, and they become the Tzedukim. That's where the name Tzedukim comes from. They are descendants of Tzadok HaKohen. They are the righteous ones. They are the Meyuchas. They have their whole lineage outlined. And so these are the Tzedukim. They believe in distinction. There's a few major distinctions between the Tzedukim and the Purushim. We'll see soon. But the Tzedukim eventually believe in nothing other than the written Torah, only scripture, and they do not accept any of the rabbinic traditions. Now, it doesn't mean that they're exactly the same as other cults or groups who did not accept the rabbinic traditions. You have, for example, the people who are sitting, we're going to see soon, but you have the people who are sitting in the caves next to the Dead Sea, where actually there's also a whole discussion who the people who wrote the Dead Sea scrolls are. But you have a bunch of different groups in those days. There's as the years go by since the story of Hanukkah, the cults and groups that are looking for themselves and are becoming, you know, figuring out what they do believe and what they don't believe in, is just multiplying. And this is the time when Jesus becomes very popular. That's why it's important to understand this. But, you know, the rule, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, doesn't always apply. It doesn't apply, you know, you'll see who's aligned with who. And so you have this mushrooming of all these different groups at the time of the Second Temple. Yes, a lot of them have in common that they don't believe, for example, in the Torah Shebal Peh, but it doesn't mean they lead the same lifestyles or believe in the same things. For example, the Tzedukim are associated with the Kohanim, who are very rich. The Isiim, the Isins, who live in the caves next to the Dead Sea, they believe in abject poverty. They believe in a lot of laws of purity, which the Christians don't believe in, and that's another another group that's rejecting the rabbinic teachings. So the fact that you don't believe in the rabbis doesn't necessarily put you in the same group with others. There's a lot of division even internally, and so the question is who's allied with who and on what grounds.
At what point did the Tzedukim leave the regular belief in the Torah Shebal Peh?
Mm-hmm.
Because you say that Tzadok was okay.
Yes.
Now, how many generations after Tzadok they were still keeping both normal Judaism, and then they just one fell off?
Right, so Tzadok is, I believe, mentioned in Yechezkel. I think we read it at the Haftorah of Emor, which is when we speak about the laws of Kohanim. So that's in Yechezkel, and that's towards the destruction of the first temple.
Now, a long time?
Yeah, it's a long time. We're talking 150, 200 years later. They still see themselves as coming from a lot of Yichus, and because they're able to get that Yichus, they can be legitimate Kohanim and serve in the temple and have access to power. But, you know, the inspiration of Tzadok is it's like 200 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's much later.
The Hashmonai were gone by, what, 100, 150?
So you have the Hashmonaim, and then you have those who, you have Herod, who they claim to be Hashmonaim. The part of the issue is also, and this is why the rabbis are a bit of a threat to the ruling class, is that the Hashmonaim claim to be descendants of, but some of them are married to non-Jews, some of them are, you know, the statement that the rabbis say that if you say I'm from Hashmonaim means you're the child of slaves already tells you that they weren't best friends. And so the people in power always, I think, claim to be Hashmonaim, but I don't know how far down that goes. So let's see the next passage in the Talmud is fascinating and actually has to do with the who was the king. The Tanya, the source too, it's from the Talmud Kiddushin. The Tanya, Ma'aseh beYanai HaMelech. There was once a story with Yanai, King Yanai, very famous, who was married to Shlomtzion HaMalka. Shehalach lekuchlit shebamidbar, he once went to a place in the desert, vekibesh sham shishim krachim. He did what you did if you wanted to be a successful king back then, which is conquer many cities. Ubechazarato haya sameach simcha gdola. He's coming back and he's expecting a big parade. He's very happy. Vekara lekol chachmei Yisrael. He calls all the rabbis, who are clearly not always his friends. Amar lahem. He said, Avotenu, our forefathers, those who came back from Babylon to rebuild the second temple, hayu ochlim meluchim bezman shehayu asukim bebinyan beit hamikdash. They ate salty food when they were building the temple, meaning they were so poor when they were rebuilding the second temple, and he wants to sort of contrast that with where he brought the people to today and how well the kingdom is doing. Af anu nochal meluchim zecher l'avotenu. Let's eat salty food remembering that time. They ate salty food with tables of gold to show the contrast. And they ate. I've never seen someone in the Talmud being called so many names. So there's a man who's a letz. He makes a mockery of everything. Levra, he has a bad heart. Blial, he's treacherous. The Elazar ben Po'ira shmo. And his name is Elazar ben Po'ira. Vayomer Elazar ben Po'ira li Yanai HaMelech. Elazar ben Po'ira tells Yanai HaMelech. Yanai Amelech, Libam Shel Prushim Alecha. The Pharisees don't really like you. And it's true, because the Pharisees believe that if you're king, you should come from Judah. You shouldn't be a Kohen who takes the throne. He says, what am I going to do? How am I going to find out if the Pharisees really like me or not? He tells him, Hakem lahem betzitz sheben einecha. Do a religious provocation. Put the tzitz, the plate that goes on the forehead of the Kohen Gadol, the one that says Kodesh LaHashem with gold, I want you to check if the Pharisees are loyal to you. Put it on, see what they say. Hakim lahem betzitz sheben einav. He did that, and he put the tzitz on his forehead. And now the question is, are the rabbis going to take the bait? Hayasham zaken echad. There was one elder rabbi there, the Yehuda ben Gedidia shemo. His name was Judah ben Gedidia. Vayomer Yehuda ben Gedidia leYanai Hamelech. Yehuda ben Gedidia says to Yanai Hamelech, Yanai Hamelech, Rav lecha keter malchut. You have a lot. You have the kingship. You have the crown of being the king of Israel. Hanach keter kehuna lezar oshel Aharon. Let the kehuna be at the hands or in control of the descendants of Aaron or the Kohanim, right? So they now this means shehayu omrim imo nishbet b'modim. The rabbinic belief was that his mother was married to a non-Jew, and therefore he is not a legitimate Kohen. Not even because he, you know, not even saying that he shouldn't be king because he is not from the tribe of Judah, but what they're saying is, listen, you're not a real Kohen. You wouldn't pass the rabbinic certification for being a Kohen. Vayivukash hadavar velo nimtza, and they look for it, but there was no evidence. Vayibadlu chachmei Yisrael bezam. And the rabbis were separated from him. It started getting ugly, and they moved away. Vayomer Elazar ben Poira liyanai hamelech. Elazar ben Poira told Yanai hamelech, Hediot shebe Yisrael kachu dino. This is if you would have been a simple farmer, the simplest peasant, then you should have separated from them. Vata melech vekohen gadol. You are a king and a kohen gadol. Kachu dincha. I'm sorry, kachu dincha. This is the way you're being treated. Basically, the guy is he's stoking,
inciting.
Yeah, he's inciting. He's causing fights, and he says to him, "Listen, are you gonna let them treat you this way?" Umayah says. So he tells him, "What are you gonna do?" Imata shomela atzati. This guy tells him, "If you're listening to my advice, romsem, destroy all the rabbis." The Torah mate'ele, what's going to be with the Torah? I mean, these rabbis, they're the scholars. They know everything. What are we going to do without them? He says, Hare krucha munachat bekeren zavit. The Torah, you have it in the book, in the ark. You can get the Torah. You don't need the rabbis. Just, you know, kill them out, and the next generation will just read the Torah. Kol arotzeh levod yavo ve'ilmod. Anyone who wants to learn can learn. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak said, Miyad nizrekabu apikorsut. He immediately became a heretic, an apikoros. Dehavelei lemeimar, he should have said, Teinach Torah shebechtav. Yeah, that works for Torah shebechtav, for the written Torah. Torah shebal peh mai. What's going to be with the Torah shebal peh? What's going to be with the oral traditions? So that indicates that at this point, Yanai immediately joined the group of the Sadducees, the Apikoris. He became someone who does not believe in any of the Torah Shebal Peh, the oral traditions, and he was okay with what he says. And immediately, he asks Elazar ben Poira to execute Ve'yargu kol chachmei Yisrael. And all the rabbis that were there were killed. V'haya olam mishtomem, and the world was desolate ad sheba Shimon ben Shetach. Now, fun fact is Shimon ben Shetach was the brother of Shlom Tzion Hamalka, and didn't get killed because the king could get away with killing all the rabbis. He can't get away with killing his wife's brother. So there's one rabbi who remains, which is the king's brother-in-law. But what you see here is the tremendous tensions that were between the rabbis and the ruling class, and how beliefs in whether the Torah Shebechtav or Torah Shebaalpeh is true very much played out in government, and we'll see soon it also played out in the temple.
At this point, that the Sadducees are a person, because right now we've got two competing narratives,
mm-hmm.
and basically the winners wrote the history. So in retrospect, we label them a person. But how, in that moment, did we know that he was an person? I mean, this guy's a troublemaker, clearly. Mm-hmm. But how do we know he's an person?
So if you ask the rabbis in that generation, is there such a thing as Torah Shebaal Peh? Is there such a thing as an oral tradition? They would say yes.
Yes, but if you ask all these other people in these 17 other sects,
right,
that are differentiating themselves from the rabbis, they don't believe that way. And at that moment, how do we know who's right?
Right, so it's interesting. If you look at the name here, Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is writing this in the Talmud about 200-300 years later. And like you said, the winners get to write history.
Okay.
And we'll see in a second, by the way, why the Pharisees are the winners. I'll say it actually right now. Basically, you have several cults. You have the Christians, you have the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Essenes. It's a simple math why the Pharisees win. The Tzedukim believe that everything is about the temple. Their power is centered in the temple. Everything's about the temple. So take away the temple, what do you have? No more Tzedukim, because who cares about what they have to say? You have the Essenes, who believe in complete celibacy and in living in the desert, and so that's not a group that lasts very long. You have the Christians, who actually do succeed. They get to write their own history. But that's why Judaism, as we know it, is, what remains is the Pharisees. And the term Pharisees actually lasts for about 200 years after, and then it's eliminated because everyone is a Pharisee, everyone's following the rabbinic tradition. Josephus writes about the tremendous benefit the Pharisees had, which was they were adaptive, and they were looking out for the people. The breakup of groups, you have the Tzedukim were actually only about 2,000, the Essenes maybe 4, the Pharisees 6, and then you have everyone else is sort of up for grabs. They want to, they'll go with, and the most popular are the Pharisees, the Purushim. Anyone know an Israeli Knesset member named Porush? Yeah, so why is that his name? Because Porush. This word, Purushim, is actually another interesting discussion. What the source of what the meaning of Purusha means? Parush means separate. So some say it means they were a bit separated from the pleasures of this world. Those were more associated with the Tzedukim, and some say it's because they were in other ways more maritally. They were more holy than the Tzedukim. But Purushim everyone that's here today is one way or another comes from Purushim. Now, how did exactly the sort of the big bang of Tzedukim begin? That's source 3. Actually, very interesting and cute discussion. It's from, many of you may know it, it's from Ethics of the Fathers, Pirkei Avot, chapter 1. Antigonos ish socho kibel mishimon tzadik. By the way, what's a nice Jewish boy walking around with a name like Antigonos for? Anyone, any thoughts on that?
Hellenism.
So either there were conversions or he grew up, Hellenistic and became more traditional. So Antigonos ish socho kibel mishimon tzadik. He heard from Shimon HaTzadik. Hu haya omer. He said, Al tiyu ka'avadim ha-meshamshim et harav al menat lekabel pras. Do not be like servants who serve their master in order to get a reward. When you serve Hashem, you should be like a servant who's doing it so faithfully in such a dedicated way, not hoping for any reward. You should have the fear of heaven on you. Now, to us, this seems like a wholesome message, right? Don't do things because you want reward. Do it because it's the right thing to do. His students took it the wrong way. Avot de Rabbi Natan is another version of Pirkei Avot, which is much more detailed. Antigonos ish socho hayu lo shnei talmidim shehayu shonim bedvarav. Antigonos ish socho had two students. Vehayu shonim lo talmidim, ve talmidim lo talmidim. And the students taught students, and so on. Amdu v'dikdeku achareihen. So they look at the teachings of their rabbi, of their community. V'amru mara'u avotenu lomar davar zeh. Why does our group, you know, it would be like, let's say, Lubavitch or Satmar or whoever, they're teaching the teachings of their specific subgroup, students of Antigonos, and they say, this teaching of our master, why is it that it says that we should do things for the right, because it's the right thing to do? They understood it to mean, do things for the, because it's the right thing to do, because there's no reward in the world to come. They understood that teaching to mean, do the mitzvot for the right reason, because, you know, once you die, it's over. If our forefathers would have known of the world to come and of the resurrection of the dead, they would never have said that. Amdu upirshu mina Torah. They separated themselves. So this is the rabbinic version of what the exact origin of the tzedukim and the baitusim is. Tzedukim al shem tzedok, baitusi al shem baitus. So this is not like what I said before. I said tzedok because of tzedok ha-kohen. Here it's because of tzedok the student. V'hayu mishtamshim b'klei kesef v'klei zav kol yameyam. Now you know who this is, because if I wanted to use cups made out of gold and silver for the rest of my life, even if I would want to and not believe in Olam Haba, I probably would not be able to. But these are people who were clearly wealthy. These are people who are the aristocracy in Jerusalem, and they started leading lavish lifestyles. And this is actually very consistent with history. So you have these people living lavish lifestyles, and you can imagine now why the Pharisees are much more popular. Because the Pharisees are the ones living with the people. They're making all the takanot for the people. You have Hillel making all these rules. So this is, it's interesting because this reflects not only their ideology, but also the way they were living. Now, that's interesting. We get the bill for what we didn't do. What do I mean? It says there's a few verses in the New Testament. And if you look in the New Testament, Jesus is very, very critical of the rabbis, of the Pharisees. And interestingly, in some places in Europe to this day, the word Pharisee is a curse. It's a word for someone who's hypocritical. And so it's interesting. So we get billed for things we didn't do. So for example, and it's also in common culture today, in the New Testament, Jesus criticizes those who say an eye for an eye. So he says, how dare they say an eye for an eye, right? Or, well, who says an eye for an eye? In rabbinic tradition, there's no such a thing. In rabbinic tradition, it was always and always been, has always been, that you pay money if you damage someone. And the interpretation of that verse is that it means paying money. So we get the blame, so to speak, of before things were clear of who is who, the Jews are the people who say an eye for an eye, even though it wasn't the Pharisees. Another interesting verse is that Jesus says, I tell you to do as the Pharisees say to do, but not as the Pharisees actually do. So he accuses them of hypocrisy, but it's interesting because you see that he does believe in doing a lot of the mitzvot, which his students then deviated from. So that's another example of the way things played out in history. There are other examples. Jesus, for example, did not believe in netilat yadayim, in any of the laws of purity. And there's a whole long back and forth on Netilat Yadayim. So it's interesting. Also, you see today there's a lot of groups that disguise themselves as Jews. There's Messianic Jews is now something that's become very popular. Sometimes I look on the internet for videos for my students, Divrei Torah, and it's so hard to tell where it's coming from. You know, you search the term Dvar Torah for Parashat whatever, and you get this thing with a guy with a kippah and a talis holding the art scroll sitter, and he says something on the parsha, and then, you know, vayaminu be Jesus, whatever. He says something that is to, and they'll celebrate Purim, Hanukkah, but it's interesting because the holidays we celebrate are exclusively based on rabbinic calendars. They're exclusively based on rabbinic rules and traditions. You can't get past base one with the Jewish calendar if you're not 100% rabbinic. So it's funny to see the picking and choosing of people who consider themselves, let's say, Messianic Jews, where on the one hand there's all this criticism of Rabbinic Judaism being made up, when on the other hand they are following Hanukkah, which is a Rabbinic holiday, Purim Rabbinic, not from the Torah. You have the whole calendar. So it's just an interesting thing.
Excuse me. Who is Baitusim?
Baitusim were also, sorry for not mentioning them earlier, they were also a popular cult. Yes.
Asking.
Not super popular, but they were also a cult in the time of the Second Temple.
And how were they differentiated from the...
Tzedukim?
From
the I'm not sure. I know there's a whole debate in terms of determining who the people of the Dead Sea Scrolls are. There's actually a huge overlap between some of the language those people use in their writings and Christian terms. And so it's likely that they were Tzedukim and that the Christians borrowed a lot of terms from the Tzedukim. But the Baitusim were not, I guess, too significantly different than everyone.
Okay.
I guess back to your point about how we label them. So this is from the Sifri, written a bit later. Kidvar Hashem Baza. It says in the Chumash Dvarim, someone who desecrates the word of God, Zet Tzeduki. That is talking about someone that's a Tzeduki. That mitzvato hefar is an apikoros, and that's talking about someone who is, has no share in the world to come. Source 6.
I studied this some, and I just want to reinforce something you said before, that this is all written from the rabbi's perspective.
Yeah.
And you can even see in the Talmud that the Talmud is very critical of the Perushim at various places. So it's like a pick and choose kind of thing. I mean, when they say this is the origin of the Tzedukim, that they have this heresy, this is written like hundreds of years later.
This is written later.
Especially, Avot the Rabbi Nathan is written like 600 CE, 700 CE, mm-hmm. 1,000 years later, basically. And this is a very... this is all from a rabbinic perspective, as you said before, the victors write history. The Tzedukim were in many respects more strict than the Perushim, especially in terms of Tuma and Tahara, we know, mm-hmm. in terms of the laws that are quoted in the Machloket and the Mishnah later mm-hmm. on. So it's not as... All I'm saying is, you're getting a bad rap, in a sense.
Well, so a few things. First of all, I think that we use the term Tzedukim colloquially, and we lump a few things together, and there were very different kinds of people. So, for example, when you want to teach as a teacher, when you want to teach what's a Tzeduki who doesn't believe in the Torah Shebaal Peh, what is it? It's someone who lives in a cave, and they believe when it says, Lo tevaru esh b'chol moshvotechem b'yom ha-shabbat, you should not have any fire in your homes on Shabbat. If you were a Karaite, you turned off all the candles and sat in the dark and ate cold food on Shabbat. Does it mean that that's how the aristocrats in Jerusalem were living? Likely not. But sometimes we lump into the word Tzeduki anyone that doesn't believe in the Torah Shebaal Peh, but there were very different people. There were the Christians, there were the Isim, who lived a completely, the very, very isolated life. Sometimes we do confuse the terms, and just for the sake of categorizing, we put them together.
But isn't it also how they developed? Because a lot of what Tzedukim did took on a life of its own.
Today you have Karaites. That's a thing that became much, much popular later in the Middle Ages. Karaites were people who said, also, we believe strictly only in the written Torah. I'm told that actually it's very interesting. During the Holocaust, there was a large group of Karaites, I think in Lithuania, but I'm not sure. And the Nazis asked a Jewish professor to write an opinion whether the Karaites were... Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, whether they were counted.
Whether they're Jewish or not. And he wrote a very strong paper that they're completely not Jewish
saved
them.
Saved
yeah, he sa- so, these things come up in different formats. It's not always the same.
They were Kohanim, and Kohanim Gdolim, and
yeah.
the Beit HaMikdash was there.
Right.
And when it came to Yom Kippur, so the answer...
We'll see. There. That's the next source. Yes. What do you do in the Beit HaMikdash? You can't... You know, today we have an Orthodox synagogue, Conservative, Reform, and 10 other denominations... But when you were in Jerusalem, there's only one temple. And you can't say, oh, well, 7 o'clock, we'll do the Yom Kippur service this way. And at 10 o'clock, there's going to be a Purim service. It doesn't work like that. So what do you do in the temple? That became a major issue. Overall, we're going to see soon that there were compromises and there were fights sometimes. But let's see where it goes. So at Masechet Shabbat, you see Tanu Rabbanan Shiv'a Purushinim. There are 7 kinds of Purushim, and it goes into different kinds of Purushim. Parush, someone who's Parush Me'ava, Parush Me'ir'a, and Parush who does something just based on Halacha. Now, if you go to the very, very end of this, it says, Amru le'abaye ve'rava letana lo titne Parush Me'ava, Parush Me'ir'a. Don't say Parush from Ahava or from Ira, from love or from fear. Because there's no difference. A person should engage in Torah study and in mitzvot, even not for the purest purposes. If you do it for the sake of another reason and you're doing the right thing, eventually you'll do it for the right reason. Now here's a fascinating statement. Amar la Yanai Malka Ledvitu. Yanai, the king, told his wife, Al titiar imin ha-purushim. Do not be afraid of the purushim. Velo mi misha einan purushim. Or from people who are not Pharisees. Ela min ha-tzvu'in. You should be wary of hypocrites. Shedomin le-purushim. Who do things similar to Pharisees. Very strong term now. Shema'asehen kema'aseh zimri. They act the way Zimri did. The way the man who was in the story of Pinchas, he goes and he hangs out with a Midianite. Ma'aseyen ma'aseh Zimri, they do like Zimri. Umevakshim sachar ke Pinchas, and they ask for reward like Pinchas. It's actually an expression today. Someone who does ma'aseh Zimri but asks for sachar ke Pinchas. So clearly, at this age, there are people who are when there's such a proliferation of ideologies, there's people with bad character. So when you have an environment where everyone has to claim this high ideology, what do people with bad character do? Do you think they just say, oh, I have bad character, I'll stay out of this race? No, they say, oh, I'm this, I belong to this group, I believe in this ideology, and then they mislead others. And that's a lot of what you see in the New Testament with Jesus taking advantage of the resentment. Close the door. Thanks. What you see a lot in the New Testament with Jesus sort of, turning over the tables of the money changers and saying, how dare you? You're a hypocrite. But clearly that's what was going on. And again, the reason is simple. When you have different ideologies and everyone's asked to be a huge ideologue, what does Joe the crook do? He says, I'm one of those. All right. Now we get to how the temple was handled. Very difficult topic. This is a Mishnah, famous Mishnah in Masachet Yuma, first chapter, which is speaking about the Kohen Gadol. Misaruhu ziknei beitin lezikne kehuna. The elders of beitin take the designated Kohen Gadol to the elders of the Kohanim. Vehelu la'aliyat beit avtinas. They took him to the sort of a chamber of avtinas. Veheshbiu, they make him swear. Veniftarulam, and then they go. What do they make him swear? Amrulo, Ishi Kohen Gadol, my sir, the high priest. Anu Shluchei Beitin, we are the emissaries, we are the proxies of the Beitin. V'ata Shlucheinu v'Shluach Beitin. You are acting on our behalf and on behalf of Beitin. Mashbi'in Anu Alecha. We make you swear in the name of B'misha Shiken Shmo B'Bayit Hazeh. We ask you to swear in the name of whoever put his name in this house, meaning God. We make you swear, do not do any of the rituals differently than the way we told you to do it. He goes and cries, and they cry. He cries because they thought he was a tzduki. Now this is a bit of an idealized version because there were Kohanim Gdolim who were tzedukim. But in an ideal universe, he should cry for even being thought of as a tzeduki. The Hempar Shimu Bochim, they cry, De'amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, because Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi said, Kol ha-choshed b'ksherim loke begufo. Whoever is suspicious of someone else for no good reason ends up bearing the consequences. The kol kach lama, so why? What's the fuss all about? Shelo yetaken mi bachutz v'yachnis kederech she'atzedukim osim. Anyone ever see the Machon HaMikdash pictures of how the temple service looked on Yom Kippur? And, you know, the pictures with all the gold. And anyhow, you see a picture of the ark. Imagine the ark with the two angels on it, the Holy of Holies, where only the Kohen Gadol enters on Yom Kippur. There's a big cloud from the Ktoret, the incense. That's the highlight of what's brought in there. It's the highlight of the holiday. Well, how's that cloud of smoke produced? What you do is, you take the incense, the ingredients of the Ktoret, and you take a shovel full of boiling hot coals. Then you put the incense on the coals, and a lot of the incense are also liquid, and when the second that hits, there's this huge burst of smoke, which smells very good. This is what the Ktoret is all about, and it bursts out. It says in the pasuk, "Ki be'anan era'e al ha-kaporet." I shall be seen through the cloud on the kaporet. The tzedukim understood that to mean that when the Kohen Gadol walks in, he has to have that shovel with the smoke coming out. The rabbinic tradition was that you bring it in, and then you put it on when you're inside the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Who knows what you're doing inside there? No one. No one's allowed to be in there at the time. V'chol adam lo yavo el HaKodesh. No one's allowed to be there. So what do? You make him swear. Don't make any changes. Tanu Rabbanan, here's a story. Ma'aseh b'tzduki echad. There was a Kohen Gadol who was a tzduki. Shehitkin b'chutz. He made it all prepared outside. B'itziyato haya sameach simcha gdola. He was very happy when he concluded the service. Finally, we got it our way. Yeah, finally we did it this way. Amar Pagabo Aviv, his father meets him. Amarlo Bni, and this passage I can't tell you how much it shares. Amarlo Bni, Afal Pishitz Dukim Anu, Mityarim Anu Minaprushim. And this is so true historically. He tells him, my son, even though we are Tzedukim, we are fearful of the Prushim. Why? Were the Prushim big bullies? No, but the popular vote was with the Prushim. So he tells them, how can you do this and defy the Prushim? So what you see here, which was very true, is that many of the Kohanim may have been Tzedukim, but they were considerate of their role as public servants, sort of like people who vote with the party, right? Even though they don't necessarily agree, they said, listen, we're serving in the temple, and we're going to do what we're sent to do. Amarlo, his son tells him, Kol yamai hayiti mitzter al hamikra hazeh. All my life I was sorry for this pasuk. And you can contrast this with what Rabbi Akiva says before he dies. Kol yamai hayiti mitzter b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha. He says, I'm sorry I never fulfilled that. But he says, my whole life I'm sorry I didn't fulfill this pasuk. Ki ba'anan avo era el hakaporet. Amarti matai avo li adi v'ekaimenu. When will I fulfill this mitzvah? Achshav shebal li adi lo hakaimenu. And now that I'm able to, I won't do it. Amru, the urban legend or the rumor was, lo ayu yamim muatin. It wasn't long. Ad shemet vehutal ba'ashpa. He died and he was dumped in the garbage. Vayu tolaim yotzim mechotmo. Basically, he had a horrible death. Ve'yesh omrim biyetziato nigaf. He died on his way out. So what you see here is, and again, I can't stress enough how important this source is. You see the idea that A, the Kohanim were often Tzedukim. You see that the population was inclined to the Pharisees, but you also see that there was sort of a shared governance, and the Tzeduki Kohanim were considerate. And they said, listen, we know who the people sending us are. I'm going to skip a second to source 9. What happened when things went wrong in that sense? The rabbis believed in nisuch hamayim, meaning on Sukkot, you bring water, ushav temayim besason, you bring water from the Shiloach stream, and you pour it on the mizbech, pray for rain on Sukkot. The tzedukim did not believe in it, didn't exist, it's not written in the Torah. So what would they do? when they did Nisuch HaMayim and poured the water in Sukkot on the altar, they would tell the Kohen pouring to lift his hand and show everyone that this is what he's doing. Shepam Achat, once there was a guy, Shepam Echad Nisech Echad Al Gabei Raglav. There was a Tzeduki Kohen who didn't want to do this, so he thought he'll be sly, and he poured the water on his feet. He thought no one's looking. Viregamuhu kol ha'am betrogeim. The entire...
They threw that,
I don't know if you call that stoned or etrogged, but he basically got etrogged. Tanu Rabbanan Maaseh Betzduki Echad, there was a story with a Tzduki, Shenisech Al Gav Raglav Ragmu Kolam Betrogem Veoto Hayom Nifgema Keren HaMizbeach. That day the Mizbeach got a dent, which is against Jewish law. Veviu Bu Shamelch Vestamu, that's how they fix it. So basically, you see there's this constant tension in the temple between the population and the Kohanim. So it's interesting, even though the rabbis didn't have any actual power, they were not Kohanim, they didn't have power in the government, if you were in a ruling position, you knew that if you wanted to please the people, you had to take consideration of the rabbis.
I have a question. Isn't it true that, according to history, about half the Kohanim in the Second Temple didn't make it on the Kippur because they bought the kohuna, or they weren't...
Right, so
are those Tzedukim, or do we know anything about that?
Well, in that tradition, they were Tzedukim. That's why it says that some people say that's why the Kohen had the bells. And when, I mean, it says in the Torah that he should have bells at the bottom of his coat. But when they would sort of hear, if they heard that the bells aren't making noise, we read on Yom Kippur, actually, part of the liturgy is that everyone's standing outside and they're like terrified, waiting to see him come back. That's, yeah, because of this. Yeah. So now, actually, I come to something that is a matter in the news. It's current events. I don't know if anyone of you saw this, but it's very fascinating from this perspective. And that is that there was recently the month of Ramadan. So there's 40 days of Ramadan, and the last day of Ramadan is called Eid al-Fitr. Now, how do you establish the months? You need, they still follow the moon. We have Hillel who put everything in a set calendar. The Arabs, the Muslims, still follow the moon. And so they had different people looking for the moon. And the Mufti of Jerusalem announced that Eid al-Fitr is going to be one day. And the Mufti of Jordan announced that it's going to be a whole different day. And this is dividing the Arab world now, because you have a whole day difference between different groups. And, you know, becomes tribal and political, but in times where you follow the moon, who sets the calendar is a big deal. And that's another thing that was probably the biggest halachic point of contention between Tzedukim and the rabbis, because the rabbis set the calendar, and there were big fights over it. So how do you establish the calendar before Hillel came and gave us our set calendars? And before the JNF started sending out around Rosh Hashanah time, how did Beis Din know?
They looked at the moon.
Witnesses. So you had to have witnesses. Now you have to start trusting witnesses, right? If there's someone with an agenda, then you got to be careful. Why would there be an agenda? Because it says that you celebrate the date of Shavuos. It says you should start counting. Shavuos actually doesn't have a date in the Torah. It says, Mimacharat HaShabbat, you should celebrate it from the morrow of the Sabbath. The Tzedukim took that literally, and they said it means from the Sunday after Shabbat Chol HaMoed. The rabbi said it means from the day after Passover. So, Tanu Rabbanan, Ma Kilkul Kilkelu HaBaitusim, this is actually, sorry for giving the Tzedukim a bad rep, this is the Baitusim who are given credit to this, source 8. Pamachad bikshu Baitusim la'atot et chachamim. The Baitusim wanted to mislead the rabbis. Sachru shnei be'enei adam bedald meod zuz. They hired two people for 400 zuz, which was a lot of money. Echad mishalanu, echad mishalem. They didn't realize that one of those people was a Pharisee loyalist. But one of them was a legitimate Baitusi. the theirs testified properly, falsely, and left. Shelanu, our witness, meaning the one who was Pharisee, Amrulo, Emor Ketzad Raita Et Alvana, tell us how you see the how you saw the moon. Now he had a good sense of humor. Amar Lahem, Ole Aiti B'Ma'aleh Adumim, I was walking up Ma'aleh Adumim, V'Re'itiv Shu Ravutz Ben Beit Slaim, I saw him sitting between two rocks, Rosho Dome Le'egel, his head looked like a calf, Oznav Domot Le'gdi, like a little goat, Karnav Domot Le'tzvi, looked like a deer, V'Znavo Mur Nachat Ben Yerchotav, and it looked like it's, basically he says something goofy, V'Hetzatzti Bo Ben Yertati Ben Afalti La'Horai, I looked at it and I was shocked. The imen atem ma'aminim li, if you don't believe me that this is exactly what happened, hare matayim zuz tzurin li bisdini, here are the 200 zuz which I got as a bribery, you may want to use them as well. So he clearly had a, you know, a sense of humor and he wanted to do his job, so he semi did his job. Amrulo mizka kachalekach, why'd you get into this? Clearly you're a guy who's a Pharisee, why'd you even get involved in this? Amar Lahem, he said, Shamati Shebikshu Baitusim La'atot Et Chachamim. I heard that the Baitusim wanted to mislead the rabbis. Amarti Elech Ani Ve'odia Lahem. I'm going to go and let the rabbis know. Shema Yavo Bnei Adam She'enam Me'uganim Ve'atu Et Chachamim. Maybe someone is going to successfully mislead the rabbis. Amru Lo Ma'atayim Zuz Netunim Lecha Be'matana. Those 200 Zuz go to you. Ve'asochracha Imatach Ala Amud. And the person who hired you is going to get punished. At that time, they made a rule, you cannot accept a witness unless it's someone that you know to be a genuine Pharisee. So the calendar became one of the biggest differences between rabbinic Jews and others, which is why, again, I find it so ironic that you have today all these new groups that call themselves Messianic congregations, Messianic Jews, and they follow every single Jewish date. The calendar was established, you know, maybe you'll say, well, they took the rabbis before Jesus. No, these are rabbis who lived far after. But still, they, you know, they'll wear kippah, which is also kind of funny, because that also came much later. But the calendar became the focal point of the dispute between Tzedukim, Baitusim, and the rabbis. So the next source is So after the three dots, Shayu Baitusim Omrim, the Baitusis said, Atzeret Achar Shabbat. They said that that Shavuot is always on a Sunday. Nitpala hem Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai came to them and, you know, he got into a whole argument. I'm not going to get into it. We're short on time, but basically he, you know, it's a Talmudic account of how he proved them wrong. Now there's actually a fascinating source from Josephus, Antiquities of the Jews, chapter 18. So I'll just read it unless there's someone else that wants to. Here, so it's at the top of page 4. And Josephus writes, the Jews had for a great while three sects of philosophy peculiar to themselves, the sect of the Essens, the sect of the Sadducees, and the third sort of opinions was of those called Pharisees. Now, for the Pharisees, they live meanly and despise delicacies in diet, and they follow, which may be why they're called Purushim, and they follow the conduct of reason and what they what prescribes to them as a good for them they do, and they think they ought earnestly to strive to observe reason's dictates for practice. Second paragraph, they also believe that souls have an immortal rigor to them, which, by the way, is something that Tzedukim did not believe in. They did not believe in Olam Haba or Tchiyat HaMetim. So that was a big divider. And that under the earth there will be rewards or punishments according as they have lived virtuously or viciously in this life. And the latter are to be detained in an everlasting prison, but that the former shall have the power to revive and live again, on account of which doctrines they are able to greatly persuade the body of the people, and whatsoever they do about divine worship, prayers, and sacrifices, they perform them according to their direction. So he points out to some of the main differences between Tzedukim and Purushim. The Tzedukim were more hedonistic. They lived very material lives. They didn't believe in Olam Haba, and so they tried to get everything they can in Olam Hazeh. But nonetheless, they differed to the opinion of the Purushim in terms of how to do the service of the temple. But the doctrine of the Sadducees is this, that souls die with the bodies, nor do they regard the observation of anything besides what the law enjoins them. For they think it is an instance of virtue to dispute with those teachers of philosophy whom they frequent. But this doctrine is received but by the few, yet by those still of the greatest dignity. So you can see that the rich people were going with this. But they are able to do almost nothing for themselves, for when they become magistrates, as they are willingly and by force sometimes obliged to be, they addict themselves to the notions of the Pharisees because the multitude would not otherwise bear them. So similar to what we saw in the Gemara with the Kohen and the Nisuch HaMayim. You see the outline and the differences and how you had the core members of every group, and then you had the population was tilting one way or the other. Eventually they became Pharisee, especially after the destruction of the temple. It's also, again, important to remember that it's hard to lump everyone into the same group. Sometimes you need to do it to simplify, but really there are huge differences among those who did not accept the Torah Shebaal Peh. You have the Tzedukim, the Issim, the Baitusim, the Christians, and probably many, many, many other cults at the time. It's in this environment that Jesus thrives. There's a lot of outrage against the rich people, which he capitalizes on that. There are a lot of people who claim to be one thing but are not, hypocrisy, and he also capitalizes on that. He originally comes from the Tzedukim. I'm sorry, he comes from the world of the Purushim. He comes, according to the rabbinic tradition, Jesus is a student of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Prachya. It's interesting, in some of the Dead Sea Scrolls, there are stories about people who were born from a woman only, who there was no man involved. They were conceived miraculously. So you see where that Christian belief originated from, or what it shared. Later, after he died, it became more prevalent. Most likely, most of the things Christians believe today are not things that Jesus would believe in. There's even a story in the New Testament that some people have a hard time understanding, but there's a non-Jew who hears about his ability to heal, and he says, "Will you heal me?" And it's like, "Well, I can't touch you," but it's clear that he's treating him differently because he's not Jewish. So it's funny that Christianity then becomes the religion of the non-Jews when he himself was very isolated within the Jewish community. It carries a lot of lessons to us, and helps us understand who we are and where everything came from. Any questions before we finish?
It was the Kohen Gadol that became a tzduki towards the
Yes,
end.
I forgot the name. Yes, it says Al Tamin Batzmecha Yomotcha, and it says he became a tzduki at the end of 80 years. Yeah, right. I forgot the name.
Josephus' perspective is the Christian perspective. The Pharisees were considered those who handed over to Jesus. The rabbis, because Jesus he may anger the rabbis.
It's hard to know what exactly happened time.
But you see his perspective, he's beating up on the Pharisees.
On the Pharisees? I didn't see it. I'm not sure
I
don't know. I would, if I had to guess, I would guess he also grew up among Pharisees, because that's who the
But he later converted to Christianity.
Yeah, but yeah, no, that is possible.
I mean, it's a very fruitful atmosphere for Christianity.
Yeah.
Of all the stuff that was going on.
Yeah, I mean, there's an explosion of ideologies. Everyone's going crazy figuring out who they are and what they are and what the right thing to do and what the right beliefs are. And there's a lot of corruption, and the rich are abusing the poor, there's no doubt that basically I think the one thing that everyone agreed on then except for the Tzedukim, is that everyone hates the Tzedukim. Everyone hated the aristocracy, the Chashmonaim, the government. Everyone disliked them. They abused their power. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.